둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
That's hardcore.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with It's the Interview Series presented by WFPK, WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, for checking out the episode and the series. Hit that subscribe button, of course, so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You get three interviews just like this one anywhere you get podcasts from. That includes Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Don't forget to give the series a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired as well. We've had some great guests on lately, including Derek Whibley of Sum 41, Juliana Hadfield, Tammy Stronach, you remember her as a childlike empress from Neverending Story. The band Ride, Minnie Driver was here, Chris Cornell, we did a rewind, remembered a fun interview with Chris. Let's see, Chloe Coleman, she's starring in My Spy, The Eternal City, Ashton Irwin of 5 Seconds of Summer, Sabrina Carpenter, Travis, Eels, 21 Pilots, Kylie Cantrell, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with comedian Reggie Watts. He is back with, well, two things, technically. He's got a new stand-up special on Veeps called Nevermind, and an autobiography that came out just the end of last year called Great Falls, Montana, Fast Times, Post-Punk Weirdos, and A Tale of Coming Home Again. Reggie's going to tell us why he's such a big fan of the 80s Brat Pack movies before he dives into the inspiration from this new special coming from his love of time travel and Gen Z's interest in the 90s, as well as finding his unique comedic voice and watching the audience tap into his brand of weird. Reggie also digs into his improv music that he frequently creates on stage and how he still uses music as a language. Why he thinks Everybody Wants to Rule the World is a perfect pop song, we definitely agree there. And his plans and desires for a second autobiography. All that and more, we're talking Nevermind, out now on Veeps, and Great Falls, Montana. It's Kyle Meredith with Reggie Watts.
Hello.
Seriously, I spent the weekend with your voice, both with this special and this book. And I don't know if they intentionally work together, because I in my mind, they all sort of work together, going from the 80s and into the 90s and this whole thing. And I mean, it just finds you in a creative time. What spurred this little bit here?
it was just kind of synchronicity, really. The book was, you know, obviously takes a while to make, and then it came out, you know, late last year in October. And yeah, and then the special, I don't think I really knew about that until maybe November or maybe December or something like that. Yeah, so it just like was a coincidence.
After I finished the book and realizing once again with the coincidence of timing, I really did want to ask you if you've seen the Bratz documentary yet and what you might have thought about that.
Oh, no, I need to see that. Yeah. I saw the trailer for it. Yeah, I really want it. Did you see it?
I have seen it. I've had Andrew McCarthy on here talking about it. And I've had Anthony Michael Hall, who's not in the series, who's not in the documentary
at
all.
Which is weird.
Which is weird. Yeah. He said no, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But,
okay. But
I love, for those watching and listening, basically, every single time you need to equate one of life's moments to something, you tend to always turn to a Brat Pack movie, which is just sort of beautiful.
It's true. I mean, I think it's rare. Maybe there, I don't know if there, it'd be interesting if someone could kind of go in historically and see if this is true or not. But I think that Gen X would be the only generation to grow up with a series of movies specifically about them. And so like a kind of about them, but also creating the culture simultaneously. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't think of another, you know, the 70s or the 60s. I mean, obviously it's like Rebel Without a Cause and stuff like that, but the emotional depth wasn't the same. So I don't know. It's interesting, but they're just easy to refer to because they were such a huge part of most of my friends' lives, you know, growing up around that time period.
I mean, they definitely did paint everything, but that's what I mean. Like, it's interesting in the timing too, because they are all making peace with it. They're talking about doing a St. Elmo's reunion movie.
Wow.
And
wow. That would be.
Take the worst of the movies and say, that's the one.
I know. Not that one. You know, like, I don't think you could redo Breakfast Club. I don't think there's no point in that. But I don't know of any of the movies that maybe Ferris Bueller's Day, but I don't know how you'd even do that. I don't know.
So John Hughes was working on a Breakfast Club sequel when
what?
He died. Yeah.
What was it?
I learned like, that from Anthony
college?
Michael Hall. Yeah, well, it's one of those let's catch up with everybody later was going to be.
I see.
But I don't think anything was ever written, but that he had the idea. That's what he was already sort of tooling with it. Maybe it's okay that it never got made.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine like what are you going to get? I mean, I guess if it would have hit in the 90s, you know, like in the mid to later 90s, I guess that could have been interesting, but it still probably would have felt like a reach, you know, or just to do it, not because it needed to be done or something like that. I don't know, but interesting to know.
Yeah. Did you ever see the Richard Linklater movie Suburbia? It was one of kind of his smaller, lesser known movies.
Oh, like the post-punk?
Yeah.
Kind of.
See, that might have been what the Breakfast Club sequel would have looked like.
I like that. That would have been kind of cool, actually.
So this special, never mind, finds you on stage, and I hope you don't mind me talking about a little bit about the premise, but this whole time it's you from the 90s, as we're talking about the 90s, this spot, this like somewhat unspecific point that seems like in the middle late 90s, and a look at the future from there. And I love that you, of course, you don't set that up. You don't spell it out for people, and watching the audience and myself, because I didn't read anything about it going into it. I think when you show up to a Reggie Watts show, there's a bit of Jesus take the wheel. you know, you do you, and we'll catch up with you.
Yeah.
When you've got something like this, like, is there a, like a birth of an idea that kind of launched how this turned out the way it did?
Yeah. I mean, well, I've always really been into I've just been into time travel in general. And so I'm always looking for an excuse to do some form of time travel. And I think with this, I loved the idea, just like one day just kind of popped into my head, but I love the idea of like making a special, like doing comedy specials that take place in specific time periods. So like something that I was calling like temporal comedy specials. And so this is kind of like a first crack at it. It's not as like hardcore as like, you know, can imagine doing it, because I'd love to do a special that takes place in, like, you know, the early 80s and get like the wardrobe perfect and the lighting perfect and use similar cameras and get everybody in like wardrobe, you know, like really go for it and make it like, you know, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood level of, you know, period piece and like 4:3 aspect ratio, all that stuff. Yeah. And so because of that, I was like, well, maybe I could try something along those lines, you know, with this special. And so, yeah. So I was like, yeah, might as well make it about the 90s. Like a lot of my Gen Z friends are like really into the 90s. And that was a time period I've lived in and know about and was around in Seattle at that time. And that was kind of leading culture a lot in many ways. So I thought, well, why not? Let's just go for it. I'll just set it up as that. And then I'll just kind of riff on whatever I think that is when I perform.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Reggie Watts. You talk about this a lot in your book, like how you found your comedic voice and the way that, you know, it got there. But when you're on that stage, it's hard to tell, you know, from at least my point of view, like how much is planned. Like you make it look easy. So either it is easy or you work really, really hard at making it look easy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, it does make sense. I don't know. I mean, it feels pretty easy in that I'm just kind of, you know, just kind of saying out loud what I'm thinking inside and just putting it out there. And that kind of leads me to other stuff. And a lot of it is like stuff that I've thought about a lot, you know, like thoroughly, like, you know, the effect of bands like Soundgarden and Alice in Chains and, you know, Screaming Trees and bands like that, like the effect that it had on society, or like, you know, Jane's Addiction's Ritual de l'Habitual coming out and how that affected my generation at that time and what music became, and then the introduction of technology and early internet and all that stuff. Those are all things that I've talked about at length, you know, with many, many friends. And I find it endlessly fascinating. And I think we're still kind of figuring out, well, what did all of it mean in many ways? Because there's not really that many documentaries on the 90s, like proper documentaries, I don't think. And so it's always been something that's been rolling around in my mind. And since the 90s have been coming up, and I'm seeing like younger generations picking up on some of the trends from the 90s, it's like giving me flashbacks and reminding me of things going on. And so it felt like a great opportunity to really indulge that time period and really just kind of pour into it a bit. And yeah, there's just a lot of energy for me behind that idea.
And again, I'll say this, it was so perfectly timed for everything. Because that the story you're telling, it's going to end up being a lot of people's stories in various parts, little parts of it, you know? I mean, your story is your own. But Chris Cornell changed my life. Everything that happened to me in my life, in my professional life and everything else, happened because a girl on a bus put some headphones over my ears and Spoon Man erupted, you know, and like that was it. Like, so to hear not only your story of being a part of it, but then to find this fun, as you say, time traveling version of it, where all I have to do is lay back and pretend, yeah, he's there. Like, he's there because it, and I guess this goes back to the way you perform. Like, do you think that you're tapping into something? Because everything is so comfortable and relaxed. For anybody to perform good improv on stage, you have to have that comfort and relaxation. But for the weirdening, as I think you've talked about, to happen, like, are you tapping into anything that you can tell?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think you have starter ideas, you know, and these starter ideas allow you to, you know, to begin to create momentum in an idea that you're trying to convey. And I think the rest of it has to do with the feeling that you're getting from the audience, you know, how they're responding from things and things that you think of that are triggered from that. So it's like this kind of like feedback response that you're getting from the audience. And that might jar my memory to be like, oh yeah, remember mini disc players? Oh yeah, let's talk about that, you know? And then some people recognizing it, or, you know, like I love in the special, I definitely kind of go on and on about some things that I know the audience doesn't know anything, Like, they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And but I love assuming that they do. You know, there's like something hilarious to me, just like keep pushing as though, yeah, they're on board. They know exactly as much as I know about this. And so I'll feed off of that energy too. So it's like this, it is a dialogue with like what's in my mind, being open, you know, it will start being open, starting with something that's interesting or dumb, and then what's at whatever's in my mind, and then what I'm feeling from the environment and the audience at the same time. So it's like it's all of that kind of working in conjunction. And then me just kind of surfing on it is essentially is what it feels like.
But isn't that great that even if they don't know what you're talking about, they're with you again, like they do know, like they even like, yeah, sure, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's what I love about it. That's what's so hilarious, you know, because they're just like, I don't, but continue. I'm just going to assume that I do.
Yeah, right. On the music side of thing, when you're up there, and again, here you are in this improv moment, how often do you mess around and realize that whatever you're doing is insanely good? Like, do you ever afterwards go, I really need to go back to the tapes and finish that song?
You know, yeah, I mean, sometimes, yes, for sure. Like, you know, a loop will happen, and I, you know, I'll build something, and I'm like, wow, that actually felt really good. That's really good energy. I do save loops. I can save loops because of the nature of how the machine works. I can save stuff that I like. So I do have them saved. And then, you know, obviously, if it's recorded, then I'll have the whole performance. It's not going to be like a going into a recording studio where I can like chop up all the different things. It's just one recording. But the idea is preserved, and I do have the loops from that idea. So there is something that I could do with it. But yeah, I mean, generally to answer the question, like, yeah, of course, there's like things. How often have I actually made something into, you know, a song from performance? Very, 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 very rarely. But I do want to practice that more seriously going forward for sure.
Yeah, the I'm trying to think if you maybe it was the first full song that you did. It lasted a while, and I just kept thinking like, I want this song. I also want him to go back to the chorus. I don't know the chorus because you created a chorus and then you dub it
I
out.
forgot
You know, he
about
goes, you know, well, take it
it.
back, man. Put that together. Oh man. And again, I know I'm jumping back and forth between your special and your book because, again, it all sort of lives in my head on this one piece.
I get
But
it.
music is something that we connect to as, you know, the most strong when we're young, and especially those coming of age years. But it seems like it's still a language for you in a way. Do you find that it's still that you have like as strong a connection as you might have back, you know, in your teen years?
Oh, for sure, easily. I mean, it's different in the teenier year, in teen year. I've obtained teen year. No, I in my teen years, I think music means a lot more in a different way, in that it, you know, like I remember listening to Simply Red's Picture Book, and thinking like, what is this mood? You know, like it has such a strong influence on like a different kind of like it exposed me to a different way of feeling life, you know, or listening to the Water Boys for the first time, or you know, or Living Color, or you know, just that there's just I think music, because also it's a different media landscape. It's like both like you're coming of age, you're not in the workforce yet, but you know, you're right in that middle area. So there's like a bunch of things happening and the time period. But for me, I think music had a bigger impact on my worldview back then. I think now it's super important to me because it still creates worlds. Like I'll hear something like the Maria's new album, you know, Submarine, and I'll listen to that and I'll be like, oh my God, this is like an incredible album from first song to the end, and it just puts me in a zone and in a space that, you know, is inspiring and lets me let go. And so I still have that with music, and it still does, it can shift things, you know, for sure, but it's not quite the same as like, yeah, when you're a teenager and you listen to Duran Duran for the first time and you're like, what is this? Oh no, you know, what's happening right now? You know, everything's changing. But yeah, it's still super important for me. Like I think now I find it, I'm a little bit more lonely in the way that I listen to music, because many of the people, like my girlfriend and many of my friends around me, aren't necessarily musicians. And so when a song is playing and I'm like, oh, listen to that tambourine part, you know, or do you hear the way the hi-hat is going in and out, and they're adding a little bit of an effect here. They don't know what I'm talking about. And so I feel like many times I'll tamp down my excitement over things, because I, not that they wouldn't understand, it's just, it's not innate to them. Mm-hmm. So I can't point out every single thing that I'm experiencing to them without being annoying.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Reggie Watts.
I'll tell musicians a lot of the time, like, there's actual magic in that song. Somehow there's magic in that song. You know, everybody wants to rule the world. There's something about that song that has actual magic in it. I am sure of it. But when you talk to those guys, they're like, yeah, man, we just like punched two chords on a keyboard over and over, and we didn't really think much about it. Like, the difference of what happens in the studio or, you know, in your bedroom or whatever, versus how we hear it, is something I still can't figure out.
It's really weird. Yeah, I know that, because that song is like, that's one of my favorite songs. I think it's one of the most perfect pop songs ever created. And just so it's like both like triumphant, anthemic, just has one of the best, one of my favorite solos in it. It's 6/4 time signature. It's just so good. That song is so good. And of course, like it's so often that creators are kind of a little, not dismissive, but they don't really have that same relationship to it, because obviously they were involved in the process of making it. But those types of songs and those types of moments and the impact that they have oftentimes are divorced from, you know, their source, like where they came from. But I think my favorite thing is, like, if I were to ever make something, or if sometimes when I make things and people are like, it had this effect on me, even though I felt like, oh, it was just something that fell out during a performance and I wasn't really thinking much of it, I at least try to come at it from their perspective to see, like, why would it have had that, you know? So I'll ask questions, and oftentimes I will see it and I'll be like, oh, that's so wonderful. It's like, that's what you hope for as an artist, that people find something about what you make. They receive it in a way that you would have never imagined. And now you've gained even more insight into what you created.
Doug, it's Inception in a way. I mean, you are digging deep into someone's, you know, whateverness, you know, planting what you create. You see that in they're dancing in the special.
Yeah. You know,
those girls that are just losing themselves in that moment. Like, you can see it in their face. Like, that's,
that is magic. I mean, for sure. I mean, you know, the idea of magic, it's just something that happens with no one's telling people to do stuff. It's just happening. You know, it just happens. And whatever that energy, whatever gets into people and makes them like respond in that way, is like, you know, you can't really duplicate it. It has to, it's only organic, you know, and that's what makes it amazing.
I do love those moments in this special. And again, and even in the book, like, where you take that story, again, for, you know, some of us who are like, just loving to hear about the era, but loving to hear about how you created the art and how you found your way. I'm a dad. I got a 16-year-old, and hearing that you went through your issues and the troubled years and found a way out. And I think that's important. I mean, that's, I grabbed onto that. It's like, I'm not having quite those issues, you know, or with him, but it's like, you know what though? These kids are all right. They're going to be fine. You know, it's like, hearing you talk about, and then, by the way, and leaving us in tears at the end of it, and I don't mean it lightly in any way, was so beautifully told and painted. It's not a question, it's only a compliment. I
appreciate that.
It's a hell of a story. And you set it up. Is it going to be do you want to do another? Because you take us through a little bit of what would another story look like. Do you want to do that book? Do you want to tell that story in depth?
100%. Yeah, I definitely want, my plan is to, you know, do the next one. It'll just be the cities I lived in. So the next one will be Seattle. And then the one after that, New York. And then after that, Los Angeles. So, because I want to, my thing is, like, after writing the first book, the most important thing for me was just getting across, like, how important those years were for me, you know, in my teen years in high school, and to share that story But I think, you know, with Seattle and New York, it's like so many things have happened in my life that I think if I list them down, people are like, there's no way all that should happen to you. Yeah, there's no way. That's impossible. How? When did you find the time? You know, like that kind of stuff. And so I want to kind of take people through that history, you know, and to show like how through time those things came to be. And I think that would be very, very interesting for people to experience. And it would be nice for me to, you know, to revisit, you know, stories and corroborate them with people back then, now, and just try to, because I like creating like a really detailed timeline of my life. And I think like doing things like books and stuff, it gives you an excuse, you know, to like really go for it and to just have like a sense of your life, you know, to think about all. I mean, we've all done so many things, you know, it doesn't matter how boring someone thinks they are. A lot of shit has happened to everybody. And I think that there's something really empowering about going back and trying to like tease out all the moments that, you know, came to make you who you are today.
Well, I certainly do hope that you continue that, because I will definitely be reading it or listening to it on 1.5, whatever comes the easiest at the time.
Yeah, 1.5. I like it. 2.0. Fuck it, man. Two times, I
need there to be some humanity in your voice. And then every time you do music, then I have to like quickly like slow it down.
Yes, right.
You know, it's like, no, I got to hear that.
Yeah, they need to create a setting where it's like just talking, right? Music, normal speed.
But I also really hope that you continue this time traveling through the stand-up specials too. When you said about the early 80s, you know, everything about the 80s, you were talking about the lighting and all that.
Yeah.
My image for every single one of them is the way light comes through blinds at nighttime, reflecting on the wall. You know, that's the image of every bit of the 80s right there. Light coming through blinds at nighttime.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, louvered shades. Yeah, like, you know, a little bit of fog or haze and like beams of light. Yeah, of course. Everything was dramatic. It was like all influenced by noir. You know, it's like 80s noir. It's pretty amazing.
I love what you're doing. I've always loved what you've been doing. Reggie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. Seriously, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh, man, pleasure for me too. I'm stoked. I'm glad we got to do this.
My thanks to Reggie. Nevermind is out now on Veeps and Great Falls, Montana. Do check out that book as well. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Of course, hit that subscribe button before you leave so you can get 3 interviews just like this one sent to you every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and a review while you're at it as well. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Tori Amos, St. Vincent, Low Fidelity All-Stars, Foo Fighters, Alanis Morissette, The Shins, Fontaines D.C., Bonnie Raitt, Bill Withers, Joan Baez, Sierra Farrell, Mondo Cosmo, Cowboy Junkies, Diggable Planets, Not a Surf, The John Spencer Blues Explosion, Gorillaz, Alejandro Escovedo, Lucas, Ezra Collective, and my interview with Beck. Just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
You're excused. I'll see you later.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.